All right. Tractate Maserot 1:1 from the Neusner translation of the Mishnah. A general principle they stated concerning tithes: anything that grows, which is food, cultivated, and which grows from the earth, is subject to tithes. Another general principle they stated: anything which at its first stage of development is food, and which at its ultimate stage of development is food, such as greens, you know, like lettuce or something like that, yeah, right? Even though the farmer maintains its growth in order to increase the food, it will yield. So even though he says, you know, well, it's not ready to be picked yet, it's still going to be subject to tithes. It is subject to the law of tithes, whether it is small or large, and at all points in its development. So you can't say, well, the lettuce wasn't ripe yet, and I picked some, so I don't need to tithe it, because it wasn't ripe. But anything which at its first stage of development is not food, yet which at its ultimate stage is food, is not subject to the laws of tithe until it becomes food. Does it make sense? Like, for example, let's say you were now think about it. It's not that difficult. Suppose that you were growing corn, okay? Because we grow a lot of corn around here. All right, now, you know that the husks of corn, they don't form right away. You know, the stalk comes up, and it's those ears of corn. Those ears aren't, at first, they're just little buds. They're not food, right? All right, let's say that you went out and you harvested several of these stalks of corn, but the buds hadn't formed yet, or into ears of corn. Is it subject to tithe or not? No, because it's not food yet. However, if you let it grow until it's edible, as soon as it becomes edible, now it's food. Now it's tithing. You can tithe it. From what time is fruit subject to the law of tithes? All right, that's the next question. We had that, you know, that first Mishnah brought up the next question. From what time is fruit subject to the law of tithes? All right, well, figs, when they begin to ripen. Grapes and wild grapes, when their seeds become visible inside them. Sumac and mulberry, when they have become red. And all small red berries, when they have become red. Pomegranates, when they become soft. Dates, when they begin to swell. Peaches, when they have developed red veins. Walnuts, when they have developed a chamber. Rabbi Judah says, walnuts and almonds, when they develop a husk. Did you hear Rabbi Judah speak there? That's Rabbi Judah Hanasi, the guy from Sepphoris, who put this whole thing together. So he adds his own little note as he puts this together, right? Carobs, when they become speckled. And black produce, such as myrtle berries, when it has become speckled. Pears, crustumenium pears, medlar, crab apples, when they become smooth. And all white produce, when it becomes smooth. Fenugreek, when the seeds are able to sprout. Grain and olives, when they reach a third of their mature growth. And among green vegetables, cucumbers, gourds, catamelons, and muskmelons, apples and citrons, these are subject to the laws of tithes, whether they're large or small. Rabbi Shimon exempts citrons, these are etrogs, which are immature. So you can't really eat that. You can hardly eat them when they're mature. That which is subject to the law, among bitter almonds, the small ones, is exempt among sweet almonds. And that which is subject to the law among sweet almonds, the large ones, is exempt among bitter almonds. This will go on like this, you know, for quite a while, page after page after page after page. You'll notice a sort of Dr. Seuss sing-song style in the Mishnah, which sounds funny. You know, like that passage I just read. That which is subject among sweet almonds is exempt among bitter almonds. That which is subject among bitter almonds is exempt among sweet almonds. This is because it was oral material. And Dr. Seuss is easy to remember, isn't it? And so you will notice that sort of sing-song, you know, throughout the Mishnah, because it was memorized oral material. But as you can see, I mean, this is fabulously interesting. If you wanted to, like, all sorts of different... the Mishnah touches on almost every potential area of Jewish life and religion in the days of the apostles. You know, what an amazing, amazing backdrop to the New Testament. All right, any questions on the Mishnah?
Yes, if you think of the New Testament, this may be really a crazy question, but as far as Protestant seminaries, do they use that as teaching material?
Yeah, a little bit. If you go to a Protestant seminary, or any seminary, you will be introduced to the Mishnah. Every seminary library will have a copy of the Mishnah. But no, it's not really heavily emphasized. Maybe about you get a one class on it, and probably not look at it again unless you were specifically pursuing Jewish studies. If you took a class in Jewish studies, that's probably where you would spend a little bit more time with it. But such classes aren't required in seminaries. No. You don't even need to learn Hebrew anymore in seminary. No.
I spent a couple years at Fuller Seminary. It was never even mentioned.
Never mentioned at Fuller Seminary. Yeah. Yeah, you would think it's, in terms of understanding the New Testament, it's pretty important. But seminaries are not really so invested in that as much as they're invested in transmitting their interpretive tradition of their denomination, right? You know, which is, I mean, you can't fault them for that. That's what they're in business to do. So they're transmitting their own Mishnah, and it comes in a class that's called hermeneutics, and in a class that's called systematic theology, and and that's their Mishnah. The Didache. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's. Is that like a little tiny short thing of the Oral Torah? Is that something completely different?
It's completely different, but very similar. No.
It sounded like it to me.
Yeah, it's very similar. Here's why it's different. It's different because it's actually. It's actually not for Jewish courts, whereas this is all for Jewish courts.
Okay.
The Didache is for Christians, specifically for Gentile Christians, who are asking the question of, okay, how do we serve this new God, this God of the Jews? And so the apostles wrote the Didache, which is a collection of oral traditions and teachings, much like the Mishnah, and handed it off to them. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that. That's what the Didache says. But it doesn't say the apostles wrote this. It says the teaching of Christ to the Gentiles through the apostles. Okay, so the apostles, no, they did not write the Didache. But probably the next generation, the disciples of the apostles, almost certainly did write the Didache. Either in Jerusalem or Antioch. That's where most scholars put it. Is it? Okay. Yes?
Is the Mishnah embedded in the Talmud?
Yes. And when we'll study the Talmud maybe next week, and we'll find that. We'll learn all about that. Yes. Yes?
So you had one book there by Neusner, but there's like 22 books next to you.
Yeah, why is that?
Yeah.
The reason is, this is laid out very well. This is very small type. This is laid out very well with just one verse on a page in nice big Hebrew font that's easy to read. Then literally translated. Then translated with an elucidation and a commentary. So this version of the Mishnah, you get about 2 pages per verse. And that's why you have but that's normal. That's a normal way to translate and to publish the Mishnah. Neusner is the only one-volume Mishnah that I know of. All right, great, thanks. All right, that's the Mishnah. Next week we'll be looking at the Talmud.